Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio, dial 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to keep up with everything happening here at 92.9 FM ESPN, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream live anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. So go download the Odyssey app today. Dennis Fuller produces the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company today, the birthday boy. He, of course, is, of course, the head coach and team director of Team Thad of the Nike EYBL Circuit. Follow him on Twitter, on X, all socials, at Dream Big Herd. Herd, happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you. Great birthday week to start off. I had to come here with you to start it off.
Big, big weekend in sports. Lots to get to. Let's celebrate what we got coming up on the program. Of course, it's Monday, so we'll overreact to the biggest stories that we saw this weekend. We, of course, had a thriller up in Minneapolis with Ja Morant hitting two massive shots in the final minute to propel the Grizzlies over the Timberwolves. Also, great defensive play by Brandon Clark to force an errant Anthony Edwards shot. The Grizzlies get a big road win. They'll return to action tonight. Pregame against the Rockets at 6:30 right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. That game, of course, in Houston. Eric will have tip-off at 7 o'clock. Jason Munn's going to join us like he does each and every Monday. We'll talk Tiger basketball with him. Tigers are at 18 in both polls. We've got those updated today. They are 36 currently in the net after they escaped FedEx Forum with a win 84-80 against East Carolina. Had an 18-point lead. They had to hold on for dear life. But all that matters, Herd, they got the W. We'll talk about that with Munns. We'll get into the list. We've had some NFL coaching carousel news. Mike McCarthy and the Dallas Cowboys will officially part ways. The Patriots get their guy, and who could have ever have thought it would be Mike Vrabel? Nonetheless, it is indeed Mike Vrabel. We'll get into tonight's game. So we got one more wild card weekend presented by Verizon. So no more super wild card weekend, because I guess you can't sponsor super, or super couldn't pay. So we got wild card weekend presented by Verizon. Thanks be to the commission on that. We'll tell your story and then we'll get out of here. But I think let's start with some football, because you and I were texting on Friday night, and I want to be very clear. I think the right team on Friday won. I personally think it was obvious to me that Ohio State was better than Texas. But what is absolutely maddening to watch, in whether it was a college game, you saw it at times throughout the NFL this weekend, I do not understand what we're doing at the goal line. First and goal from the one, sneak it four times. Let's be clear. If it were first and goal from the 7, from the 8, I understand that, hey, maybe you're going to have to get a little cuter, because we don't think we can just run it in four times from there. All right, that's fine. But after you pick up the penalty, it's first and goal from the 1. The worst thing that can happen to you, if you sneak it and fail, second and goal from the 1. Like, that's the thing. Like, I'm texting with one of my best friends, and he was a really good offensive lineman for us. And he was telling me, he's like, you do realize, like, when y'all would send plays in from the sideline, like, half the time, if it was like at the 1 or the 2, we just said, screw it, sneak it. And if we don't get it, then we'll get it the next time. Like, just like, that's what we're doing. I just don't understand. Crack toss after you get stuffed up the middle, fine, so be it. By the way, try it again. But then the other thing that's like makes even less sense to me, you can now push your quarterback. And I understand not everybody can be as good at the tush push as the Eagles. But every somebody can at least get a yard out of this. We're not talking fourth and two. This is a gotta have it play. And then on the strip sack that goes for the touchdown, it's like, I thought the play was like already lost at that point. When you had the second down toss sweep and when they showed the end zone cam, there was no way that play was going to work at all. Like, they were asking offensive linemen to make blocks that they were never going to make. I just do not understand getting cute and doing this at the goal line. Like, all right, let's say Quinn Ewers isn't comfortable under center. It's like, well, I've seen him go under center before, so whatever. Why not do what a lot of teams are doing? They're putting in plays where you bring in like a tight end that maybe played quarterback in high school or whatnot. Teams are going under center, and like you can work on that. I'm at a loss for some of the goal line stuff. And like, I do understand why Bill Belichick's looking at the world of coaching going like, I can go and put together competitive teams just by not being stupid.
No, for sure. It feel like at that time too, Texas had real momentum.
Yes.
Like, Texas had a chance to win that game. Honestly, if you take away the craziness of that goal line and you take away Ohio State scoring like within 10 seconds an 80-yarder before halftime, Texas, to me, had the momentum or whatever outside of those two plays. Now, if I want to give Texas a little defense, or if I was taking their side and I get offensive linemen or whatever, but that some people do try to get creative. Ohio State, like, top four, they box, they 7-8. It do look very difficult.
No, they definitely look daunting, and let's be clear. That's an unbelievable defensive front.
Yeah. But like you said, if I was going to do anything outside of the quarterback sneak, the dive, I would rather line up and throw in it. Trying to go for a sweep play is like death row to me or whatever.
Well, and it's not even just that it was a toss sweep. It's crack toss. And for those that are like, what is he saying? Like, is he trying to sound smart? No. Crack toss is essentially you are bringing a receiver from out wide, you're motioning him in, and you're asking him to set the edge. By the way, let's think about what that means. I completely agree with you, as daunting as Ohio State's front is. You know the last person I probably want to block the defensive end? My wide receiver that's coming in motion that weighs about 200 pounds at most. Like, my deal is, like, if you want to go wide, all right, fine. But, like, I think you are better off just doing RPO and trying to at least keep the numbers. Because the other thing was you had the motion and then the action was the toss. Every Ohio State guy just started slanting and just going 8,000 miles an hour. It's like, oh, my God, I can't believe that didn't work.
Agreed. So, like you say, at best 200 pounds of the receiver.
Yes.
So, to me, when you're dealing with, unless you're going to trick them or do a screen or something, when you're dealing with a very fast, aggressive defense, I think that's the worst thing you can do a sweep. I just think it exposes. If that first person is not a head cracker and can get, it's over with. 3-4 people is blowing you up. And then I think it went from first and one to, like, am I being crazy? Like, 2-5, 2-6 the next play? Because
so the first play they did try to run up the gut, stuffed. Then on second down, they tried to run the toss play, and that was at least a loss of 7. Then on third down, I think they tried to throw it to the end zone, and they thought they were going to get the call. I can't remember if it was a fade or not. They tried to throw it to the end zone, no call. And then on fourth down, this is the other thing. They tried to run a double move, and it's possible that maybe it would have been open, but that's the other thing. It's fourth and goal from the 7. Ohio State knows you've got to throw it.
Yeah.
So sure. They just had their ends super wide, and they just rushed the tackle. The tackles, like, had no chance. Like, they weren't going to get wide enough, and so a double move was going to take way too much time. Like, I mean, I was almost better off. It's like, try, I don't know, bubble screen or tunnel screen. I hate bubble screens. But if you want to try the tunnel screen or whatnot, I'm with you. I think you hit on something else. The play before the half, Could not agree more, because the other thing is, it felt like at when it was 7-7, you could kind of think back to the night before where Penn State has largely dominated the first half, but it was only 10-3. And if you were Notre Dame going into the half, I think you had to feel pretty good saying, like, man, they dominated us, but we're down one score. We get the ball coming out. Like, let's go get a score and see what happens. When Texas ties it up at 7-7, you could feel the pressure shift back to Ohio State, but it lasts, to your point, I don't know, 10 seconds. Hurt, I think it's conceivable to me that is one of the worst defensive plays I've ever seen. It's not like a screen went for 40. A foam screen to the running back went for 75, and it wasn't like an all-out blitz. It was just, it was almost like I kept wanting to see another angle. It's like, was I missing something? Did they formation this into confusion? And really what I think happened was Travion Henderson goes up the right sideline, and it just felt like the defense stopped pursuing. They're like, oh, well, he's going to step out of bounds. And then he made one guy miss, and then you can kind of see from the sky cam when they show it, Coach Rogers, God bless him, used to just always refer to it as OS speed. Like, you can just see, like, mm-hmm. he breaks through that one front, and then you can see all the rest of the DBs just go, oh, yes, and sprint and take off. But, like, they couldn't get to him because Travion Henderson is a fast back. But that one play, to me, it's like the – it's similar to the Notre Dame kickoff return against Georgia. That play to me was every bit as big, and we spent way more time talking about other plays. That play to me was as big as anything else that happened in the game, because if that game – goes to the half at 7-7, you could feel pressure starting to shift. And it's also important to note at that point, Texas's defense had settled in. Because clearly what had happened was Ohio State came out with a game plan that Texas was not quite ready for, because they just marched right down the field. And then Howard started to get a little bit of pressure. I think he might miss like 7 or 8 straight. And then you could feel it really starting to set in that, oh, Texas has flipped the momentum, to your point. But just by allowing that screenplay that had no business, like, what do you think? There's 40 seconds left. Like, you knew they were either going to run a draw or a safe pass. Like, how can you be surprised by that?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think you could have played everything soft.
Yes.
Be ready for it, like you said. I honestly think if you would have that play right there, if they would have only got 2-3 yards, they probably was going to play it safe and just go into halftime, because the problem with that play also, Ohio State got they were getting the ball to lead.
Yeah, to start halftime, to start the second half.
Second half. And so with that, and I will say this, Texas is a team that's up and down. So anybody you asked around media, just a common good fan, nobody fully trusted them. They think they could be dumb. And I felt for people to be so against them, they was right there in the mix of things, which they deserve to. Texas have a really talented roster, too, and a talented defense, and a lot of high-level guys and a really good budget and stuff, too. So it was almost like the cream against the cream, you know what I mean? Me, personally, and not to get off subject, I said this a few weeks ago, when the bracket came out and they beat Georgia, I was like, I think Ohio State is getting to Georgia, but I am rooting for Notre Dame for the upset. I think I even said it last week. I know I said it 3 weeks ago to some people or whatever. And it's the same thing. Like, I thought Notre Dame was looking so dominant that they would get to the championship. But for some reason, I know they're way better than Notre Dame. I'm rooting for Notre Dame. And the reason why, I watch these shows. So I'm a Hurricane fan.
Sure.
So the thing about the Hurricanes is we had our big thing. When I became a Hurricane fan in seventh grade, you had the Ken Dorsey era. You remember we won, like, but before that, I go back and look at the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, and as I'm doing research, one team that always come up that was really, really good back then was Notre Dame.
Yes.
And so in my head, I would say the first play, if Miami not in it, the first playoff done the so what the right way, 12-10, wouldn't it be, and we do all this about conference alignment and how much money conference is getting, wouldn't it be an awesome story if the team that won it, granted, they got to be not even in a conference.
Yeah, and that's kind of the other thing. It's like the history of why they're not in the conference. It's like, well, back when the Big Ten was actually expanding, not even the 90s. Like, I'm talking like the 30s, the 40s. Like, they didn't want the Catholic school in. Like, it was, you know, like there was real fear of the Catholic school getting in. And so they've kind of been able to maintain their independence. And then, like, when everybody comes, comes knocking at their door, they're like, we remember. We're good. Yeah.
Okay.
We're cool. I think you bring up an interesting point, because I found myself wondering this. Outside of Ohio State's fan base, which is vast and massive, and there's no denying it, I don't feel like Ohio State ever really, like, captures casual fans. Like, to the same level of, you know, you're saying, you know, in Memphis, you're becoming a Hurricanes fan. Well, it's like early in my tenure, even though my dad's an Ole Miss fan, like, Ole Miss sucked, and I'm watching Florida throw it all over the yard. I'm thinking, that looks fun. And so you wind up, like, there's lots of people that were, like, casual Gator fans, you know, in the 90s. And then because I'm a Gators fan, my brother, who's 2 years younger than me, apparently you cannot like the same things, he becomes a Florida State fan. And so, like, you know, it's like, it just, but I don't feel like anyone just becomes, like, a casual Ohio State fan. And I don't know if, like, I don't know if it's a fan base issue. I don't know if it's that even though they're dominant and good, they're not all that appealing. Like, they're not fun to watch. Like, I don't know what it is, because Jeremiah Smith is as fun of a football player as there is in college football. But, and, like, you can acknowledge, like, he's exciting, but it's almost like he exists outside of Ohio State.
No, I'm with you. I think it's one of them things, too, like, they don't need anything else. Because when we talked about this one day, when you started talking about them schools in the Big Ten, unlike, like, the average high major college, whether you in the Power Four or not, you know, SEC school, they average like 20,000 students. Yep. When you start going to the Big Ten, Ohio State, you're talking about 60, 70.
Massive, massive schools. Like, yeah. Even like we looked it up, it's like Illinois, like, has 47,000 undergrads, and you don't even think about that.
Yeah, so the Big Ten, or maybe more so in the Big, or in the Midwest, it might be more casual fans. And me, you, and your brother would have had a field day, because Miami, Florida.
Oh,
Florida
my God.
State,
we had quite the triumvirate there of takes.
We would have had it. But for me, it was just, I used to, like I say, when I watched the history of the game, Notre Dame would always come up. Penn State with
Paterno.
Paterno. Like, it used to be Michigan, or how you need to be Oklahoma.
Yeah.
The guy from Oklahoma. So
Switzer.
So I used to watch the – of course, you know, you had Florida State and us. And Florida, so I used to just watch the history, Texas, the history. And Notre Dame was, like, intriguing. I think SMU and some more people. So I just would love – I think it would also be just a greater storyline also, because they lost their first game against a mid-major football team that –
yeah, week two, they lose to Northern Illinois. They're still the biggest favorite that lost outright this season.
You see what I'm saying? It's so many stories. And I thought it was week one. It's so many stories.
They beat A&M. Because remember, week one was actually Labor Day.
Okay.
What it was week one of NFL and college playing the same weekend.
Okay, yeah.
Because we were off on Labor Day.
And so
when you and I didn't come back. We had Labor Day off, so you and I didn't do a show that Monday. So it was probably the first Monday we came back and talked about football was that weekend.
And I was, okay. And so, I think these are great storylines, Jeff, because when he loses that game, you know how crazy fans are, you know how crazy the media are, I got to say we are at this time, and how last year they lost a couple. You had people actually talking about, like, you know, you was hearing some whispers about some coaching situations at that point, which you probably should if you – lose to Northern Illinois.
Well, it's like, it wasn't just losing to Northern Illinois. It's like they'd lost to Marshall the year before.
Right?
Or maybe it was 2 years before, or something like that. They've had those kind of losses where you're like, what are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
The losses where you had no business losing the game.
And so with that happened, you would have never thought. I know you're a bet man. If somebody, whoever put their money on them to make it to the championship or win it, probably is getting 10 times their money at this point if they would have put it on them back then. And That's I think the storyline is great. And I also think, Jeffrey, that shows you sports teach you a lot about life. And I'm sure you done learned with you, your family, your dad so much. Because think about this, Jeffrey. Three months ago, to him and even Ohio State coach,
yep,
people were saying about even their jobs. Down to this day, both of them, now people are saying both of them are up for some of the NFL openings.
Yeah, I think Marcus Freeman's way up more than Ryan Day is. Because I think, so Marcus Freeman, this is an interesting thing. Would you, if you're Marcus, because I think you and Marcus are about the same age, because you're 38 today, sorry, 38 years young. I want to say Marcus is 39.
Okay. Still youthful.
All right, Marcus, he just turned 39. So he's a year and 3 days older than you.
Okay, okay.
All right, so this would be a good, and you also know the workings of NIL and how jobs. Would you rather parlay this into, because let's not forget, like, I think this is an important part of the conversation. Like, Marcus signed his extension, but I mean, 3 months ago, there are people being like, this guy's not going to get it done. Would you parlay that success and jump to the NFL? Because one of the jobs he's rumored to be involved with is the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you sit there? Because I'm inclined to think like this. I think there will be more volatility in this era. Like, I don't think you're just because you're winning today means you're going to win tomorrow. But I think if you're at Notre Dame and now you have this system where you have all of this money and all the people are willing to sit there and go, all right, we're willing to do whatever it takes. Notre Dame's now in a different level of job than I think it was even 5 years ago. And it was a great job then.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more of a prestige job then. Now I think it's truly a great job. They go in the portal, they can get just about whatever they want. I feel like it's going to be easier to maintain success here, but the argument would be you have young quarterback with the Bears. You're a culture guy. You are closer in age to this player. You can relate to this player. You've just coming from college. Like, you've seen it all. If you're him, how seriously would you think about jumping?
So, and Jeff, this is a good question, and I want to hear your answer after, because, like, you bet. So, you do agree. And so, me, I'm a kind of a, when it comes to a career or something, I'm a kind of, or something to put my family on the next level, I jump out there. But outside of that, I like to be a little more safer. And I'm the guy that we talked about this. Every coach that left Oregon, I think, is crazy. Starting with Chip Kelly and starting with half of them out of jobs.
You and
right
I see
now.
That. You and I see. And it's why I think Lanning is actually.
Guy that went to Florida. He's out of a job.
Willie Taggart. Willie Taggart.
There's another guy out of a job. Now, thank God, Christopher.
Helfrich got fired.
He got fired.
But,
okay.
But to your point, Willie Taggart was at. So he went from Western Kentucky, because Taggart is actually one of, like, I think he played for Harbaugh's dad.
Okay.
So he's got the Harbaugh connection. He goes from Western Kentucky to South Florida. And then he takes Oregon. And then after 1 year, he leaves Oregon to take the Florida State job.
And then he went down.
Correct.
So I say that to say, and you probably see this on social media too, where it's like, would you take a layup for $50,000, free throw for $100,000, wing shot for wing three for $200,000?
It's got to be a straight on three.
And a corner three for $500,000. And everybody keeps saying,
what are you giving me for a straight on three?
I don't know if they had that one up there.
My brother used to make fun of me because he would laugh. My brother was bigger, stronger, faster, better at everything. But he's like, if it got into a three-point shooting contest from a three from the top of the key, he would never play me in it. Because he's like, if you ever watch my brother, this is him saying, all I would do is grab a basketball, dribble straight out to our goal, and then just shoot from right there.
From the top.
And he's like, he can make that shot in his sleep. But so if you're offering me that, I'll take that. But I'm with you, man. It's free throw layup.
So I would take the free throw. So you either had
100,
people,
right?
Yeah, you had people on there that would either go, they was all in with the corner, or they wanted to take the guaranteed free throw. So I say all this to say, I know if they're serious about them, I feel like Marcus is going to take the Bears job, because most people, and that's why I brought up the Oregon job. I have some college offers right now. I don't always, in my eyes, I have gotten mature enough to understand, bigger is not always better. Making a little more money on a job, a certain job, is not always better, because you got to look at it from a whole lifestyle standpoint. So with that being said, Jeff, I think he's going to take it. I would say at Notre Dame, though, for me personally, because I feel like since he didn't win to this championship, not let him win it, I think he will have 5 to 10 years to breathe. I do feel like the NFL and to that quarterback develop, they're not sticking with coaches as long as college right now, it seems like.
No, I think that's fair because – but I don't know if this is an outlier in college because I think a lot of what we saw this cycle was so many of these schools were not wanting to spend the money to buy out coaches because they didn't know how much they were going to have to pay coming up. If in April the house settlement goes through and you're going to have to do revenue sharing, everybody didn't want to just go get broke trying to pay it out. Now, is that something that's going to – like there is a question of did college sports have like a come-to-Jesus moment where it starts with the Jimbo Fisher contract where – it's like $100 million guaranteed. I think when they fired Jimbo, I think he got $77, $78 million guaranteed. Gus Malzahn had like $30 million guaranteed. And so has college sports had that moment of, we can't keep paying coaches to not coach, so let's be more patient with them. Let's, instead of spending the money on buyouts and going buying new staffs, like let's put it into the NIL and whatnot. Because basically the same people that you'd be hitting up to pay the buyouts are the same people that you would be hitting up for NIL. So there's that question. Whereas with the NFL now, I think there's a few things at play. Number one, we don't really know how much money these guys do or don't make. Like we have reports on some of them, but in general, NFL coaches, like there's lots of NFL coaches that are not making what college coaches make. And so they're a little bit more willing to say, all right, we'll just get out of this contract. But even in this hiring cycle, because I focused on this story that I felt like went underreported from the owners' meetings. I believe it was Jerry Jones that got up at the owners' meeting and gave a presentation on dead money in the NFL, the amount of money that they were spending on coaches that were not coaching. And this hiring cycle, this Black Monday cycle that we always see, like it was about half of what we normally we see closer to 10. I think we saw 5 firings. Maybe Pierce made it 6. But we're starting to see in general teams are more hesitant to just fire somebody and pay them not to coach. And then I think the other thing, though, that's now starting to work, though, against that is you see these teams that are turning it around really quickly. And so, you know, even with a person like Dan Campbell, who's not considered, you know, scheme whiz kid, this isn't Sean McVay, this isn't Shanny, this is culture guy. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they went 3-14 or 3-13, whatever, year one, but then they turn it around in year two, they go 9-8. Last year, I think they went 13-4, and this year they go 15-2. Well, now you're starting to see, like, this idea that you can't just rebuild in 2 years, like, that's insane. So if you can find the right coach, you can do that. But, like, I don't know. I'm with you. I think if I were advising Marcus, I would, first off, I mean, he played in the NFL. So I do think the first question is your dream to coach in the NFL? Because if that's his dream, like, so be it. Like, go chase your dream. Like, how many times, like, there's 32 of these things, man. How many times is the timing going to line up to where you can have a job with a young quarterback and your chance to mold it? How many times do those come up? Like, so if that's his dream, so be it. But I would just really stress to him, I think you have the type of job that you can win at for a really long period of time.
Yeah, I'm with you. And to me, that's what it's all about. And you got to make sure you're going into the right conference. And just like we see with C.J. Stroud and other guys, like, Caleb Williams is a really good point guard, but I mean, my bad. I'm still a really good quarterback.
It kind of works. I feel like we're now starting to use point guard and quarterback interchangeably. Yeah. Like point guard of the offense.
For sure. But one thing about the NFL, you have to have a really good quarterback. And is Caleb Williams, I mean, I think we all want to act like, and he has a chance of being all that. But I'm just kind of on the fence with him. I think he could be all that. I know he's so young, so we still got a lot of time. You got to at least give him 3. But it's a chance. I think he could be, because of the quarterback salary, people are pushing over quarterbacks quicker too right now because you don't have to pay them yet to that year. So if a lot of them ain't producing, they're just drafting a lot of them. So I do think he's a stud. But what I'm saying, and he had good points this year, but I still would like to see a little more before I – deem him one of the next guys up, me personally.
Though you make a good point in this sense. It's undeniable that he's incredibly gifted. Like, from a talent standpoint, there's no question on that. but he has not had proven success without Lincoln Riley. And I also want to be very clear. Lincoln Riley hasn't had proven success without Heisman Trophy winners. Like, you know, like it turns out like via, you know, when he has Baker, he's cooking it up. When he had Kyler, he was cooking it up. Even Jalen Hurts, he was cooking it up. He has Caleb cooking it up. Well, all of a sudden, bring in Miller Moss, and that offense looks fairly pedestrian. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's they kind of go hand in hand. I think the thing I still find myself, I'm still a stockholder in Caleb. I think part of the problem with Caleb is his personality turns a lot of people off. So that when he starts to not have success, everybody can't wait to be like, bust, bust, bust. I still think if you put the right people around him, he could still be really good. But, like, you know, they make the hire. They get the guy from Seattle that gets fired. And I'll never forget, Jackson Smith and Jigba was asked, Seattle's like, hey, you know, what is it? It's not Grubbs because he's the guy they just fired. It's not Steichen. It was the guy that was in Seattle with him. Like, he just got the Bears job. What would you say? He's like, really? Good luck. So, if you can put smart people that understand quarterback play around him, I still think he's so incredibly gifted that he could make it work. But to your point, like, we haven't really seen him, like, thrive unless it's off script. You know, oftentimes it's holding on to the football and making like these plays that are outside of the offense. I still think I'd like to bet on him because I think everybody's down on him. I think the guy can play. But to your point, like, I don't know if they're terrible up front. Like, how many? That's the other thing. Listen, I want to be very clear. As a Justin Herbert truther since day one,
yeah, you got
I enjoyed Saturday. Yeah. I can also acknowledge this is true. Justin Herbert was getting his absolute crap kicked out of him. And all day, every day. And that makes it really hard to throw. And so, does he still turtle in the big moment? Yes. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know of many quarterbacks that would have had success. Like, it was funny. I was looking up this morning. It was hilarious to see. It's like, the quarterbacks that got pressured the most on Wild Card Weekend, you'll never believe this. Those were the quarterbacks that lost.
Yeah. It makes sense, yeah.
But, like, I actually think, though, spinning this back to you before we take a break and get to Munz. I think this is another interesting part, and I know you and I have talked a little bit about it, with college assistants. In basketball, I think if you're willing to go take, let's be real, like a tough head coaching job, mid-major, low major, however you want to define it, I think those avenues are there. But in this era, I think what we're going to see is the idea of lead assistant from great program getting another really good high-level major job. I'm not saying it's impossible. I just think it's starting to become less and less likely because essentially what everyone's saying is we've got to go hire a brand. We've got to hire a name that's going to motivate our people to give money so that we can get the roster up ready to go. Well, even if you're a great assistant coach, like, you still just don't have name recognition. Mm-hmm. Even if you're coming from a great program, like, I just kind of wonder, like, is the pat like the idea of it's not uncommon to see either high school coach or AAU coach go and sit on a bench in college and then work his way up. I just don't know, like, if that path is regular anymore.
No, you touched on it. But like you said, for Marcus, I think he probably I think he would take it probably. And what's funny, if I'm Notre Dame, you know, I'm gonna tell you who the first name I'm calling? Probably calling Chip Kelly or whatever, right? He's right there. He just beat me for the championship.
I wonder if that's the other thing we're starting to notice. Guys like Chip and like Gus is doing the same thing with Norvell at Florida State. I think they've now like gotten to this point. And honestly, Kingsbury with Jaden Daniels, like Kingsbury's had head coaching jobs, and they're like they're starting to realize, like, hey man, as the offensive coordinator, they're getting paid millions.
Mm-hmm.
To just call ball plays, and they don't have to deal with everything else. Like, I wonder, does, like, Chip Kelly want to do, like, with all that?
I for sure know he want to be a head coach, Chip Kelly. But I think he know he messed himself up out of Oregon. He would want to be a head coach for, like, a top 15.
Sure. As great a job that recruits itself.
Yeah. As great as a, oh, my God, awesome. And you were out there as a UCLA and how beautiful it is. It feel like, even when they have great years, it just feel like it's still – not a football school. own. I mean, they got the money. It's beautiful. It's nice living. But it just don't feel like it. But on Notre
like
Dame,
the stadium, like Pasadena, like people think about the Rose Bowl. It's like, y'all, Pasadena is like an hour from campus. It's not even like, oh, campus is 2 miles from the Liberty Bowl or whatever, a mile and a half, whatever it is. It's like, no, 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 no. Pasadena is like, you are getting on the freeway.
Yeah.
It is nowhere near.
But last thing, too, before we go. Think about this, though. I know you say Ryan Day name ain't as high as Marcus or whatever, but me and you have discussed and I have seen shows across the world discuss that how many better coaches or names they feel Ohio State could have or could have had over Ryan Day. So to go from there, and this was just loud a couple months ago.
A month ago, when they lost to Michigan.
Yeah, it's been going on for years. He came in. To go from there to I am hearing NFL teams are entering, I just think, like, that just shows you in sports or in music or whatever, you're one win away, you're one hit away, you're one, because I don't think they can disrespect him, though. Him making this game and let him not win it, I don't think anybody can say anything to Ryan Day for the next 5 years. Unless you lose to Michigan. But
yeah, I'll say then they will. Like, here's the one thing. I actually buy, maybe this is hypocritical of me, I buy that Marcus Freeman is getting legitimate NFL sniffs. I used to always call BS whenever the Lincoln Riley NFL things would come up. I was like, he has the Oklahoma job. There's nowhere else that can have leverage. What job is Ryan Day going to get that's better than the Ohio State job? None of them are even open. So then you have to use the NFL's leverage to, like, get a sweeter extension, new deal. I don't get the sense that NFL teams go and try to pick Ryan Bray's brain.
No, that was crazy to me. You know, not to be a backstab, you know who loved that Ohio State job?
Chip Kelly.
The guy right there. If they offered him, he wouldn't say, no, I just love running the plays. He went there because he probably felt like, Ryan Day, I mean, I would probably be, like, considered the biggest voice.
Oh, for sure.
And
it's like, he was Ryan Day's coach. So it's like it even goes back further than that. It's like he's known Ryan since he was 9. It's like Ryan hired his mentor. And so it's like, but to your point, it's like,
even at Captain D's, that's a sweet job. You go work for your friend.
Absolutely. It's the guy that's always going to, like, so many of these coaches have egos. It's like, but when they, it's always funny to watch coaches with massive egos. When they get around their mentor, it's like they're immediately, it's like them and their dad are the two people, like, that they have the highest reverence for. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's talk some Tiger basketball. Jason Munz joins us next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Munz is the Tiger basketball beat writer for The Commercial Appeal. You can follow him on Twitter on X at Munzley. Joins us each and every Monday on the program. Munz, what are we listening to?
Jeffrey, this is a song called Seeing Stars. It's by a band called Cigarettes for Breakfast.
Cigarettes for breakfast. I was going to say, if you made me guess, I was like, this really sounds like beach slang.
So I walked into, everywhere I go, I try to go to, like, an independent record store on every trip. And last year when we went to Temple, I went to a place called Repo Records in Philly. And when I go to these places, I try to, like, if there's enough of a selection, I'll try to find, like, something local to whatever city I'm in. And I was thumbing through the rack, the local bin at Repo Records, and I found on the sticker it said Philly Shoegaze. And I'm a big fan of shoegaze music, and I liked the name of the band, so I bought it, and that's off that album. That song Seeing Stars is off that album. So going back to Philly this week, I figured let's pay him a tribute.
I will say I do feel at least somewhat vindicated. I was double checking. I was like, I'm nearly certain Beach Slang's from Philly too. Yeah, they were. They all had that similar sound. So we'll get the report. Are you going back to the record store?
I'm going back to that one, and I'm adding two others.
Okay.
Like, I'm supposed to land at 1 o'clock, and I've got till, 5:30.
That means you're also probably flying American, so I wish you the best.
Southwest.
Okay, good, good, Southwest. good. I trust yeah. them much, much more. All right, let's talk. Yeah, let's sure. talk a little Tigers here.
Yeah. Okay.
We'd mentioned last week what to do about close losses against inferior opponents. Now, I would also make the argument, I think North Texas is probably a better team than they're going to get credit. But I don't know if we'd make that mistake with ECU. But you did make the point, hey, that was a back-and-forth game with North Texas. It was a defensive struggle, but they found a way to come out. It wasn't as if they had a big lead and let it slip. Isn't that what happened on Saturday?
Dot, dot, dot. You know, yeah. Narrator, whatever, you know, fill in the blank. Yes, that's exactly what happened. Memphis led by as many as 18 points. Appeared to be well on their way to, you know, doing what you're supposed to do against a team that is not good. And then if you listen to the way Penny Hardaway described it, Memphis just came out of halftime and did their own thing. And, you know, it's a similar tune to the one that we heard last year and kind of the year. I mean, in years past, we've heard it a lot. When Penny is asked, you know, why did things go the way they went? And a lot of the times it's him saying, you know, they didn't follow the game plan. And, so, I mean, yeah, like that's, they did not follow the game plan. They got comfortable. Let's see, what else did we hear? It was just a situation where Memphis they turned the ball over 10 times in the second half.
Yeah, I think it was 10 times that led to 17 points.
Yes, that is correct. 17 of, I think, the, 17 of East Carolina's 70 points came in the second half and off of turnovers.
Yeah.
So it's not really encouraging. It was not the kind of performance that is super, you know, that inspires a ton of confidence. You know, you're supposed to beat a team like that handily. And, you know, and not for nothing, like one half, Memphis did that. It was just they didn't in the second half. And so, yeah, like you hope it's not a trend. If you're a Memphis fan, you hope this is not the same bug that bit them last year rearing its head again and everything. I personally don't think it is. I think for whatever reason, Memphis just gets bored playing at home. This Memphis team just seems to either get bored or get complacent or whatever at home. So they're going to Temple on Thursday and then Charlotte on Sunday. Maybe they'll snap out of it.
All right. May I offer another reason for why maybe this is different than last year?
Oh, I think it is different from last year, but yes, I would love to hear it.
PJ Haggerty.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
I think coming into this year, there were legitimate questions of, is this guy just empty stats on a bad team? And I think it was fair to question that. I don't think it was personal. I think that was a legitimate question. I think what is so obvious to me is, man, that guy just makes winning basketball plays. And down the stretch, like, you know, this game shouldn't be that close, but it is that close. We know who to get the ball to, and he just gets him out of it. And it really does feel to me like he has that same quality, I feel like, that Kendrick did. It's like, even if it's not the greatest shooting night, which it certainly wasn't a bad shooting performance on Saturday, he's still going to get to the line, and good luck stopping him there, because he has just been automatic almost.
Yeah, so last week on your show, I think I gave a factoid that, this is what it was. It was against North Texas, he scored 27 points on 11 of 14 shooting, and he was the first Tiger since DeAndre Williams in 2022 to hit for 25 or better and shoot 75% or better in the same, you know, in the same game. Well, new game, new factoid, PJ Haggerty became the first Tiger since Jeremiah Martin in 2019 to score 25 or more points and go a perfect, like shoot perfect at the free throw line with at least 10 attempts in the same game. PJ Haggerty had 25 points and he was a perfect 10 of 10 from the free throw line. Quite a few of those coming in the last couple of minutes of that game. And it just is perfectly illustrates your point. Like when whatever he's got to do to get the job done, he's going to do it. He's probably going to do it. 9 times out of 10, he's probably going to do it. And if he's not, Tyrese Hunter probably is. Like, it should not get lost in the shuffle here that bucket that Tyrese hit. I think it was around the 1 minute mark. It was a 2-point game, and he just got switched. Like CJ Walker switched onto him, and Tyrese recognized that he had a mismatch in terms of quickness, and he took advantage of it immediately. And I think PJ ended up hitting a couple more free throws to make it to give it the final score. But yes, I think it's. Honestly, I think it's both those guys. I think it's PJ Haggerty's ability to just, however it's got to get done, he'll get it done. And then Tyrese Hunter's sort of leadership and winning mentality, winning pedigree. I think you put the two of those together, and it's going to be really, really tough for anybody, even if Memphis is having an off night.
Obviously, this coaching staff liked PJ. They recruited him and they pursued him aggressively. Do you think he's been even better than they expected?
I would say yes, that is probably true. Just because you never know.
Sure.
You know, like you never truly know. You can have all the confidence in the world in the player and in yourself as a coach. And as
I think they could probably know, like when they got Kendrick, I think you could probably know Kendrick was going to be good because there was so much body of work and he'd been on good teams. But I'm with you on PJ. How could you honestly, like, I don't know how you can believe in the player, but like, I don't know how you could sit there and go like, we expected him to be this.
Yeah. Kendrick was a conference player of the year already before he came to Memphis. So yes, like he was a very much a known quantity and I get it. PJ Haggerty was the freshman of the year in the conference last year, but you know, it's very very different situations, you know, coming from Tulsa to Memphis and coming from the way Kendrick Davis did, coming from SMU to Memphis. Like SMU was good. SMU was like they'd had good seasons with Kendrick Davis there. Tulsa was not that. Like Tulsa was not a good team. And so yeah, like you really and truly can never I would be surprised if anybody would be like, yeah, we knew exactly. We knew we were getting a first team All-American candidate. We knew we were getting a National Player of the Year candidate. Like we would have taken that all the way to Vegas and bet it all on that. Like, I don't think there's anybody in that building who would say that. But so, yeah, I mean, and the other thing here is like, you knew based on what you had seen that he could score and you knew that he could come up with like, he got a lot of steals, but he didn't exactly, you know, I don't know that it was great defense.
Lockdown defense. Yeah.
Right. So you throw in the fact that he's a really good rebounder. He's averaging, I think, 5.5 rebounds a game. He's at like 3.1 assists per game. He's third in the country in scoring. On top of those things, you know, like I don't think that's easy to do, to put up that many points. But oh, by the way, also give you 3 assists a game and do all these other things. Like he's also rebounding and he's also playing defense and he's also, you know, he's doing all these different things and he's not just. Even if you break down his scoring, he's not just scoring by hitting a ton of three-pointers or taking just a boatload of shots. I mean, he's don't get me wrong, he is taking quite a few shots, but like,
which by the way, I'm fine with.
Level. Yeah. We all should be, but it's not like David Jones level taking. Like, so I was looking at it. So they're going to Temple. Jamal Mashburn Jr. is having a great, really nice season. He's second, I think, in the league behind PJ in scoring. He's averaging over 20 points a game. But he is taking, he's taking 33% of Temple shots, whereas PJ is taking, I think, 26% of Memphis' shots. And PJ is outscoring, you know, like he's taking much fewer, significantly fewer shots and scoring more points than Jamal Mashburn is at Temple. And that's no knock on Jamal Mashburn. It's just like further underscores the job that PJ Haggerty has done so far this season at Memphis.
You've also written about his All-American chances, and you've discovered something that could at least be interesting statewide. What did you find?
So I didn't write this. Our Jonah Dillon, our football writer, actually uncovered this.
He was, why it came up on your page. Or maybe it was just on the Tigers page. I apologize.
No, that's okay. So ESPN, Jeff Borzello and Myron Metcalf just put out like sort of a predictions story, like a roundtable story where they're kind of going back and forth and talking about you know, who their picks are for this at this stage of the season.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they gave was their you know, midseason All-American teams. And they had the same picks all the way down to the last pick when Myron picked Chaz Lanier at Tennessee. And Borzello has P.J. Haggerty at Memphis. And, yeah, like that, it was just a funny sort of, not funny, but, you know, whatever, amusing thing that it doesn't it seem like it always comes down to Memphis and Tennessee.
Why
even
not,
when they don't
right?
play each other? Yeah. Yeah, like if that's the way it shakes out, like if it comes down to one spot and you've got to pick between Chaz Lanier and PJ Haggerty, it's going to be a really, really fun, you know, debate. I don't know that we'll ever know that, you know, like if it truly does come down to those two, but it's certainly interesting, can make for some interesting, you know, chatter as we get through this season.
We're wrapping up here with Jason Munns, of course, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. Make sure you go follow him on Twitter on X at Munsley. All right, then the other thing I wanted to ask you about, I believe it was last Monday at Penny's radio show, he had mentioned, you know, wanting to get more guys in. He thought the amount of minutes was taking its toll on the core group of guys. I think it's six guys that are averaging 30 minutes or more and then a big drop off. We saw more guys play more minutes on Saturday. Did that feel more game flow or did that feel intentional in your mind?
It felt intentional to me. I think I'd have to go back and look, but obviously Dante Harris was the big one that stood out. He played 22 minutes in just his third game of action since transferring to Memphis. I mean, look, that he was brought here for that purpose.
To play, yeah.
To play and to help the Tyrese Hunters and the PJ Haggertys of the Memphis world get a little, you know, not have to play as much. And so, yeah, so he played 22 minutes. PJ